We are live here at the People's Health Center. First day, October 15th of the annual enrollment period is open. Medicare, People's Health representatives are here to help walk you through the entire enrollment process. They'll tell you more about People's Health if you want to know about their Medicare Advantage plan, but there's no obligation or anything. Main thing is to help you decide what you want to opt for your Medicare coverage, especially if this is your first year, because it can be very confusing with parts A, B, C, and D, what's covered, what's not covered, are you still working, do you need insurance, do you not need insurance, etc. So come on in. We're at 3017 Vets near Causeway, right next to Party City. Representatives are here. I'd love to see you. Andy Smith joins us now, our friend, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center, talk about the presidential race. How you doing, Andy?
I'm doing just fine. We're in the final, kind of final home stretch. The playoffs are going. When the World Series comes, well, heck, the election might be over by the time the World Series is over.
You know, I was thinking about that yesterday, watching afternoon baseball. It's kind of nice, huh, to see baseball on in the afternoon, the playoffs, and you get all excited, even though if you're like me, you don't really know who these players are, but you start rooting for people, you know?
I agree. You know, it reminds me of being a kid, and, you know, you watch teams other than Cleveland playing in the playoffs every year.
It reminded me more of the presidential election, because I don't really know who these people are. None of us do, but yet you find one and you root for them, right?
I think you've got something going there. I think that looking at the elections, it's a lot like rooting for sports teams. You rationalize why your team is better than the other team.
And when it comes to polling, and I don't know if you and I have discussed this or not, just like the Fox pregame show or NBC or whatever it is, when the analyst picks your team to win, then all of a sudden they're a genius, right? And they know what they're talking about. Even though it has nothing to do with the outcome of anything, if they pick your team, then by God, I'm with them, and they got it right. But if they go against you, then all of a sudden they're a jerk, even though it has nothing to do with the outcome.
Of course, but that's human nature, and actually that's one of the reasons they have polling, is because it gets people rooting for one team or the other, and they continue to watch the TV show. Follow the money, as in everything.
Yeah, this is probably, we should call this the cynic half hour with Andy and I talking about the presidential race, because it's, I'm sorry, neither one of us get in line and start waving flags, because truth be told, come on. Let's talk about the polls, because I see this new NBC poll that shows, and again, you're the pollster, these numbers confuse me, and my head doesn't work that way, but it seems like every time I see a change in the polls, it's always within the margin of error, which makes me wonder, what are we really determining here?
I think you're absolutely right, and that's one of the problems that I've got with the reporting on polls, is that it takes a fairly significant shift to be meaningful. The margin of error on almost all of the polls that you're looking at is about plus or minus 3%. That means you have to add or subtract 3% to each estimate. So we have to add or subtract 3% to Harris and add or subtract 3% for Trump. That the ultimately, a candidate's not really winning statistically unless they have about more than a 6 percentage point advantage over the other candidate. So all of the stuff we're seeing now, in my mind, is just kind of noise of an essentially tied race.
You know what stood out to me on this? 48% of voters now say they approved of Donald Trump's job performance as president, which is higher than he ever held when he was president, which indicates to me everybody always thinks the good old days. How's that Billy Joel song go? The good old days were never as whatever and whatever it is. You can look it up. Google it. The guys in the truck will look that up for us. But anyway, the point is this. I've made the analogy, or at least people have texted in the analogy, I don't want to steal their thoughts, that it's kind of like having a crazy ex where after you're away from him for 4 years, you remember the good stuff and you forget the crazy, and you're thinking, well, you know what, that was a kind of nice time in my life and blah, 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 and you forget some of the bad things. Any analogy there to be made?
Well, I can't speak from experience.
Yes, you can. Come on. We've all had that.
Well, there was that one time.
There you go. That's right.
There's something about that. It's a really interesting phenomenon that if you track job approval ratings, they kind of go, they start off high when a president just gets inaugurated, then they slowly slide as their time in office continues. And then once they're seen as lame duck and they're going out the door, then you see their approval ratings start to rise. And I think Joe Biden's approval ratings have risen as well. But Trump has been out of office longer, and I think that you're seeing Republicans remembering some of the good things and forgetting some of the bad things, and some of those independent voters doing the same. But relying on our memory for accurate assessments of things that we really aren't quite sure how they happened in the first place is probably a very fuzzy area.
We didn't know what the hell was going on then, let alone now, four years later, right? That's interesting. Well, let me take a break. We'll talk about Kamala Harris's approval numbers when we come back, and also how that relates to the Biden presidency, and how it just, again, what seems to boggle my mind is for years we've always talked about the vice president. Who, what, where, what do they do exactly? Why are they there? We understand that if something happens to the president, but other than that, we don't really know what they do. And it would seem like sometimes running for vice president is a ticket to political obscurity, right? But it seems as though people are trying to hook up Kamala Harris with Joe Biden's tenure, and I don't know that she had a lot to do with the policy. I'm not defending Kamala Harris. I'm just talking about the role of the vice president historically. Andy Smith's our guest, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. I'm Tommy Tucker. We're live here at the People's Health Center. It's at Medicare Center in Metairie, 3017 Vets, next to Party City. We're underway. Representatives are here. Today is the first day of the annual enrollment period. It runs through December 7th, but don't wait. If you got any questions, come in. They will sit down with you. They'll walk you through Medicare Parts A, B, C, and D. Talk about what's best for you. Talk about Medicare Advantage plans. Maybe it's good for you. Maybe it's not. But either way, they'll take the time and answer whatever questions you have. 621, time for traffic now, WWL. All right, 626, Tommy Tucker, WWL, live on location here at the People's Health Medicare Center, 3017 Vets, next to Party City in Metairie. Representatives are here. It's the first day of the Medicare annual enrollment period. They'll walk you through parts A, B, C, or D. We have donuts here from Joe's Cafe, six locations across the East Bank and West Bank, Metairie, Terrytown, two in Marrero, West Wego, and Gretna. Back to Andy Smith, who is in New Hampshire, who is, well, that's because it's what he does. He's director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. You know, they got stuff that you see on Twitter with former President Trump trying to say Arizonians and not doing a very good job of it. You got this stuff that's going around with Tim Walz, and it goes to the importance of the vice presidential candidate. When I saw it the first couple of times, I thought it was J.D. Vance. I didn't realize it was Tim Walz. I conflated the vice presidential candidates. Some kind of problem with a shotgun. Have you seen the movie The Campaign, Andy?
The Campaign, no, Ferrell? I don't know if that was the candidate, but that's going way back.
This was with Will Ferrell, and with Zach Galifianakis, and it's a funny movie about the idiocy of campaigns. And when I saw this stuff with Tim Walz, I thought Black Hawk Down. For people that have seen the movie, they'll know what I'm talking about, where they got some kind of stage shotgun incident or something. All of this stuff that the different candidates are going through. First of all, I don't know that it matters if they do anything wrong. I don't know if it matters if they do anything good at this point, does it? Is that going to really make a difference?
I think for the vice presidential candidates, it's really, can they not make a mistake and say something that's really, that they have to explain later? They can go in lieu of the president or the presidential candidate and speak to large crowds to kind of get people fired up. Then provide maybe a little bit of filler for the national press, like putting on a duck hunting suit. I saw that picture of Walz hunting. It reminded me of two things. First, it reminded me of John Kerry going to try to get a hunting license, where his hunting clothes obviously had just come out and freshly pressed out of a package. The other one is, I thought, you know, Walz may not want to go hunting with ex-vice presidents, because didn't Dick Cheney have some issues with hunting?
He had some troubles. Well, do me a favor. Google, when you get a chance, The Campaign and Black Hawk Down, and that'll show you what I'm talking about, all right? And you'll see that, we're living now. Life has imitated art, it seems as though. So, before we let you go, we got a minute left. Can anybody do anything? The October surprise, got a couple of weeks left before the campaign, early voting underway. We know who Trump is. The people that love Trump love him. The people that hate him Kamala Harris, I guess her approval numbers are tied to Biden. Can she do anything to mess up or that's going to make a difference? Or is the cast the die pretty well cast?
I think it's pretty well cast. I think it's going something dramatic potentially could happen. We've seen a few of them this cycle. But it's probably only going to move things a couple points, maybe a percentage point or two. But, you know, as close as this race, that could make the difference. So I wouldn't be surprised to see people, either of the campaigns, push for an October surprise. But it's a matter of the press runs with it, how hard they cover it, and if anybody pays attention at this point.
Quick question, because we're late already, but Donald Trump shoots somebody on Fifth Avenue. Does he lose any support?
Well, it depends on who it was.
But
it depends on who it was and if they deserved it. I think that's the rationality that you'd get from them.
Thank you, Andy. That's on that note. We'll leave it. We'll take a break, come back, talk about the mid-Barrett. Who wasn't that they deserve it? We'll take a break, come back, talk about the mid-Barrett area sediment diversion. We're live at the People's Health Medicare Center, 3017 Vets in Metairie. Come on, have some donuts and coffee. Right now, time for WWL First News. Yeah, it is Medicare Open Enrollment Day, the period, the first day of open enrollment period, and it can be confusing. People are here right now from People's Health to help walk you through the process, so why not get it out of the way early? Not a lot of waiting or anything like that. You can come on in, and they'll sit down and talk to you, walk you through the different Medicare options, Medicare Advantage, and everything that you need to do or don't need to do to make sure that you get what you want. We got Joe's Donuts from Joe's Cafe. Yeah, six locations across East Bank and West Bank, Metairie, Tarrytown, Marrero, Westwego, and Gretna, two in Marrero, as a matter of fact. And Simone Malloz joins us now with the coalition, the campaign director for Restore the Mississippi River Delta. I got a lot of papers in front of me here. Simone, sorry about that. How you doing?
I was going to let that work out. Yeah, I was still stuck on donuts. Good morning, Tommy. How are you?
Maybe I had donuts on my mind, too. That's the problem.
I had donuts on my mind, yeah.
I see this story, smaller mid-Barrett area from Mark Schlefstein, smaller mid-Barrett area sediment diversion likely, details are scarce. Then I read a little bit about it, and Pat Connick's gotten to get trying to get details on where it stands. Gordon Dove says some of it is confidentiality agreements and all that. Tell me where the mid-Barrett area sediment diversion stands as far as you know.
Yeah, Tommy, thank you for having me back on to talk about this. I know that we talk about this a lot, but it's a really complex subject. It's a complex project, but it's really, really critical. And last week there was a hearing in Senate Transportation, of which Senator Connick is the chairman of, and this subject was brought up again. The legislature stays on top of this issue. They want to talk about where this project is. It obviously not just has, you know, big environmental impacts, but it has huge economic impacts as well. And so Senator Connick and some of the other senators on Senate Transportation wanted an update from a previous visit to that group that happened in August. And we learned a little bit more. We have not learned a lot about where the project stands. We know that it is not really moving forward. And so Senate Transportation was another opportunity to talk about the status of the project, where it's headed, where it's going, and to allow the legislature to talk about the project more when details are scarce.
Is Plaquemines Parish main concern with this, the oyster fishermen?
There are always concerns about the impacts of projects of this size and scale. But, Tommy, we've talked about this before. This is the size and scale of a project that we need to address Louisiana's land loss problem. In particular, this project addresses injuries that were received as part of the Deepwater Horizon tragedy, right, all those years ago. There are negative impacts that seem to be concentrated on, especially now and lately, and to specific user groups for sure. But we feel as project supporters and people who believe in the process of which they got to, you know, decide to build and to fund this project, we believe that those impacts were looked at, they were studied. There's tens of thousands, literally, pages of analysis when it came to making this decision. And we believe that those impacts were looked at and were mitigated for. So the thing that we kind of is missed in some of this storyline, Tommy, is what happens to our coast if projects like this and this particular project is not built? What happens if there is a future with no action? And the answer is very bleak.
Who is the Louisiana Trustee Implementation Group? Because, you know, this is a major project. Now they got this group. I don't quite know who they are. And then, you know, we got the new head of the Coastal Protection Reproduction Restoration Agency saying that they got a confidentiality agreement. There's a lot of public money. I don't quite understand how that can be.
Yeah, great question, Tommy. You know, it's, I mentioned it's a very complex project, and one of the reasons is because it is paid for with oil spill dollars. This goes back to something that doesn't even have to do with Louisiana in particular, with the Oil Pollution Act, or OPA. Some of the other Deepwater Horizon funds comes from Clean Water Act. These are federal pieces of legislation that describes how the... In this case, how BP and the other parties are basically have to pay for what happened for Deepwater Horizon. So this is a legal process. It is a complicated federal process. And there are federal agencies that make up the TIG, or the Trustee Implementation Group. They are the ones entrusted with the money to make sure that the injuries are mitigated for. There is a state version of that includes several state agencies also, but really it goes back to this federal Trustee Implementation Group who oversees the money. This is where it gets a little complicated, Tommy. The money that we have for Louisiana is for Louisiana the place, not necessarily Louisiana the government. So in the case of Deepwater Horizon dollars, several different people have used that money to build projects in Louisiana. So some of the federal agencies, there even is a tribal designation for tribal communities to access this money to build projects. So the money is for Louisiana. It's just not necessarily always for the government of Louisiana. And so that's all built into that process.
Let me take a break. I'm going to try to let my eyes deglaze here, and when we come back, I'll just ask, what is the status of...
You made me sound unfun. This is important.
Well, I know. It's just very complicated. I guess what I'm trying to find out is, what is the status of the project? And when I hear Gordon Dove talk about a scaled-down version, is that going to be like the compromise that they've reached with the flood walls with the Corps of Engineers before Katrina? We all know how that turned out. 652, 8 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 6:58, Tommy Tucker, WWO. Quickly back to Simone Malloz, campaign director for Restore the Mississippi River Delta, talking about the Mid-Barataria sediment diversion. So, Simone, bottom line, where does the project stand? And when I hear Gordon Dove talk about a smaller version of it, is that akin to, you know, half a loaf is better than none, or you're just kind of whistling in the wind because it's just going to be the worst of both worlds. Thoughts?
Yeah, the state is talking to Plaquemines Parish. Plaquemines Parish had filed suit against CPRA because of a local permit that they think needed to be obtained. And because of that, that's why we have not learned a lot of information. And there's been this non-disclosure agreement, essentially. And yes, we have heard and they have discussed the idea of a smaller diversion or something in place of this. But Tommy, this project took 6 years to permit. It went through an extensive process to get funded. We don't think it's that simple as just deciding to no longer build it. They've already spent roughly $519 million on this project. And so we want to know, we want details, we want to hear more about things that are not being discussed right now, because we have real concerns about not just the money, but the impacts of a smaller project, what that would look like. Does that really mitigate for the injury that occurred, et cetera? So we're not going to stop asking these questions, and we appreciate when others who care about Louisiana's coast do the same.
I do, and we'll have you back. Thank you, Simone Meloz. We're live at the People's Health Medicare Center.